Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here, and welcome to another episode of the We Are Women podcast. With me today, I have Mary Kelly, and all the way from Colorado, and we've just been discussing the weather. I'm sitting here in Brisbane. It's summer, and we've got a cyclone up north, and Mary is digging herself out of the snow to get to meetings. So it's quite a very different when you're in a different country, a different hemisphere, and a different time zone. And it's so wonderful that we can catch up like this. Now, Mary C. Kelly, she has a PhD, a CSP. She's a commander of the U.S. Navy, retired. She's a best-selling author and international speaker, specializing in business and leadership development to improve profits. The information you're going to receive today is just quite amazing. Now, Mary served for 25 years on active duty in the U.S. Navy, operating shipyards, airfields, and bases with specialties in logistics, intelligence, and HR. She has been quoted in the Wall Street Journal, Money Magazine, Entrepreneur, Men's Health, Yahoo Finance, Mensa, MOAA, and CNBC, and thousands of other media outlets. And Mary's books are used in 9 countries. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be with you today.
Yeah, when I originally, saw your book, Why Leaders Fail, then that's what, initiated our conversation. And we've been trying to get together for quite a few months. You're such a busy lady. You're doing lots of speaking and presentation engagements.
I'm so fortunate because I do get to work with a bunch of different groups. I specialize, because of the background in economics, I specialize with people who are more linear. So credit unions, banking institutions, finance, some medical folks, some legal stuff. And then this fall, there were some landscapers and some educators. So it's just been really, really fun to research all these industries and get to know them.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. In Australia, we've just had a banking royal commission. We didn't have as much trouble during the GFC as a lot of other countries, but now they're sort of investigating everything. And So that would be a bit tough. Is that something that you've come across with those industries, working with them?
Well, what's interesting right now is that there are many industries that are undergoing a lot of change. For us right now, the healthcare is still very much in flux. So those groups of people are still struggling with change, implementation of this new coding process, and all kinds of regulations. We've had a series of financial regulations that have also thrown people kind of into a whirlwind. And many of those they were enacted in 1999 and then 2010. And then we've had some retractions the last few years. So if you're in the industry, you've just got to be great at change.
Mm-hmm. And that would be, I'm assuming that would be a really important part of your leadership training, would be how to deal with change.
It is. And, one of the points we make in the book, it's called Why Leaders Fail and the 7 Prescriptions for Success. And I'll just tell you really quickly where that came from, that we're sitting in the back of a room, my co-author and I, and he said, leadership is really tough. I said, well, it's only tough if you do it right. If you're just sitting in a chair every day and keeping it warm and you don't care about your people and they don't trust you and they're not performing and you're just all getting a paycheck, then, it's a pretty easy job. But if you do it right, it's all consuming. And he said, I wonder if there's something we could do to make it easier for, say, our execs, our mid-level managers, who are kind of like the sandwich generation of the business world. They're getting squeezed on both sides. He said, could we do something that would make it easier for them? So we had 100,000 employee surveys, and we taxonomized all of that data. And then we came up with the 7 areas where employees were frustrated with their bosses. And then we went back to the bosses, about 10,000 of them, and we surveyed them and we said, hey, are these problems in your workplace? And most of the leaders and managers were like, no, that's not a problem. That's not a problem. And then we knew we had something. And of course, one of the things leaders have to do is to be able to keep their people informed, especially during times of change, help people cope with the emotional levels of it, as well as the physical things, you know, the technological side. So it's kind of like when you go to get a new phone. One of the things that holds people back from getting a new phone is, oh gosh, now I have to learn the new phone. Well, now magnify that in your business life. And that's what a new buyout, a merger, an acquisition, a new technology, or new regulation can do to all of your employees.
Mm. I know I spent 20 years as a GM of sales for a multi-million dollar business. And I know that some people can really, you know, just take it as it comes. You know, they just sort of move on, and others are really challenged by change as it comes in. But sometimes those I found the ones that are the most challenged but actually accept that there is change are the ones that adapt to it better rather than the ones that just flow, you know, because they don't have the same commitment, I suppose that is. They just do whatever's going. Is that something that you've come across?
Yeah, it's so interesting that you raise that. And I think you're right, that the people who kind of go, oh, okay, all right, no big deal. I think there's two kinds of people. Part of those people, they don't care. They're not very vested. You know, they don't really care. They're not trying to do that good a job. The people who are really bothered by this are people who are, they don't want to be frustrated at work. They don't want to be incompetent. They want to do everything 100% all the time really well. And so when things change, they feel frustrated because they feel as though they're not able to do 100%. And that's part of the problem. And in any change, things get worse before they get better. So there's four stages to change. This is in our book. And the first stage is denial. So let's think about it in terms of, I just like to liken it to things that we all, you know, experience or have seen.
Oh, I loved your new phone analogy. That was enough for me. I'm just, I hang on to my phone for ages because it is, I could learn something new.
Yeah. And all of a sudden you're like, well, the new phone. And they're like, wait, you mean there's not a headphone jack? Well, then I don't want it. So there's this denial aspect. No, I don't have to get a new phone. I don't want to get a new phone. I don't want to go to the store and spend 4 hours and transfer my data and have repeat contact. I mean, all of those things. But we also don't like to be frustrated. And that's part of the problem. And then we go, okay, so the denial phase is first. And then there's active resistance. I'm not going to do it. If they can't make a phone that works for me, I'm just not going to get a new phone. I'm just going to hang on to my old phone. And then when this phone dies, I'm just not going to get a phone. I'm just not going to do it. And in the workplace, we see this as they can't make me change, or what idiot thought this up and I'm not going to do it. You know, this resistance. And then you get to the exploration phase. Well, wait, okay, that new phone, it does have a really good camera and it is much faster and I can load all these other apps and I don't have to worry about only taking one picture and immediately deleting it. It could be better. And this is the what's in it for me phase, the exploration phase. Once people start to see that phase, you know that they're on their way to the commitment stage. So it goes through denial, resistance, exploration, and then commitment. And that's when you walk into the store and you say, yep, I'm getting a new phone. And then you start to play with it and you're not scared anymore. And they walk you through stuff and you're like, okay, I got this. And that's where you want people to be in the workplace too.
That makes a lot of sense. It looks so funny. You know, we're on with phones, but my husband's retired halfway through the year, and he first thing he wanted to do was throw away his work phone, and that was it. He was done. He just had no interest in it whatsoever, and so he got a dumb phone, and then he got on his motorbike, and you've been to Australia, you know how big the country is. He got halfway around to Exmouth, which is on the middle of the west coast, and a month later, and then had a little accident on his motorbike. And you can't do much with a dumb phone when you are in a remote area trying to organize repairs and everything else that goes with it, flights back and a whole deal. So he came back and he got into so he was very, very resistant. Then he sort of realized he had to have it. And now he doesn't use much more than texts and photos and things, but he's putting all the names in and he's doing all the little things and checking out things now on the phone. So he is in there. He's committed to it now.
He's okay. He's all right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah, the bike was motorbike. He towed a trailer on the motorbike, which is very cool. A 1700 Quacker he rode on. And it was just a dream of his for retirement. It was just, he'd been dreaming of it for years. And then unfortunately, And he got halfway, but it's not Australia. Can't go back and do the other half because you've just got to do the whole thing again. But yes, anyway, it was that exactly what he was going through with that. Okay, now I'm committed to this fight. It was just pure denial originally.
Total denial. I totally understand it. And so especially I think we as leaders have to understand that not everybody embraces the change that we want. And sometimes we dismiss people when that change doesn't really affect us. So one of the things that I was talking to somebody about yesterday when I was in the Navy at Pearl Harbor, I was trying to talk to this group of people about supporting other people's ideas, even if you originally think they're dumb. And we've all been there. We've all been at a meeting where somebody walks in and says, "Hey, I've got this great idea." And especially when they're the boss or, you know, they're a board member, something like that. They've got this great idea. I don't know about you, but I roll my eyes and I try not to do it actually, you know, in front of people. I'd call it rolling my eyes out loud. So I try to sit there and smile politely and listen. Well, at this one idea, the admiral came in and said, "My wife got a great idea." And we're all like, "Oh, no, 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 please, no, sir, please, no." He said, "My wife thinks that we should have free drop-in childcare at the medical facility at Pearl Harbor." Well, most of us around the table, drop-in childcare didn't affect us. I didn't have any kids I needed to drop off. Nobody else at that table had any kids they needed to drop off. And the admiral didn't have any kids he needed to drop off. He said, "Well, my wife said," and we're just cringing, "that, you know, people have a hard time. There's kids running all over the place and they get other people sick and all this." And I'm like, and we were all pretty resistant to this idea. We're like, "Yeah, so they should do something about that." Well, it turns out they was us. And so we initially all rolled our eyes, and it turns out it was a really good idea. It was wildly cost effective. And people were able to drop off their children for, like, you know, $4 an hour so they could go to medical appointments and not have to worry about, you know, their kids under the age of 6. Well, what a really good idea that turns out to be. So initially, sometimes we don't give other people's ideas credence, partly because they don't affect us. And I think change is a big part of it. We may love change. We may say, "Yes, let's go eat Thai food for dinner tonight and Sri Lankan food tomorrow night." But other people go, "No, I don't want that. I want my meat and potatoes." And for that kind of change, it bothers other people. So sometimes we as leaders really have to put ourselves in other people's positions and try to view it from what affects them the most.
And that's an interesting point, isn't it? Putting yourself in other people's positions. And when I was in the management role, and you would have had this on a grander scale with, you know, with your role as a commander in the Navy, but I had, you know, there were different people, different groups that had, I'm trying to think of the word, you know, they were concerned about just their component. So the warehousing were concerned about their component. The office were concerned about the sales team, and then with management. And part of my role was to help that everyone could have a little bit of understanding how each one of them worked and saw it from a different perspective. You know, especially you've got, you know, salespeople are out there are just hunters, you know, and don't worry about the paperwork. It'll get done. Let's go make a sale. And the admin having to support them and be comfortable in doing so, and the other speech respecting each other. That's a very big part, isn't it, of identifying within that workplace of each different group's interest. And so then, what level of change or ideas affect each one, and how to get each group to embrace them. How do you do that?
It's so interesting that you touch on that, and you're absolutely right. We found in the 7 failures, that one of them was the leader's inability to motivate, manage, and coalesce the team, which is exactly what you're talking about. And it's really difficult because the salespeople are judged on their sales numbers, and the admin people are judged on, you know, how they are able to process certain things. I mean, everybody is judged on a different piece, that sometimes it's really hard to get outside of that piece and say, okay, well, how would we all work better together as a team? And again, this teamwork idea, we talk about it, but people don't really get it. And I'll tell you that when I got to work with the Australian, I've been able to work with both the Australian Air Force and the Australian Navy, up in Darwin with some of the Navy stuff, and then down in Adelaide with some of the Air Force, and a few other things in some operations, that we talk about this idea of teamwork. But it's really about not just watching out for your piece and your job and making sure you're successful, but you know, you've got to have the SA, the situational awareness of what everybody else is doing. And the idea is we're all in this together and we all have to succeed together. We all have to work together and know what everybody else is doing. And everybody's got to show up with their A game. And you've got to know what everybody else is doing or there's failure. And for us, you know, that can be really dangerous as well. So we talk about this idea. Teamwork, but it's hard. You have to try to assess everybody's strengths, figure out where the weaknesses are, figure out how you're going to, you know, compensate for those weaknesses, figure out who gets to showcase certain things, how you're going to be fair across the board. It can be really, really difficult.
Mm. Yes. And then in a workplace, you might just start, you know, things, they may, there's nothing, no such thing as perfect, but they may be running smoothly. And then a leader changes and they bring in a different perspective. I know that, that happened recently in the place that I was working in. And it was a motivating factor for me to leave because a micromanager came in and I'm stumbling over my words because it affected me that, you know, I just couldn't deal with it. And, you know, and especially managing sales, you can't micromanage sales under any circumstances.
No.
And sales teams.
You're so right. I had exactly that happen where a pharmaceutical sales manager came in, new guy, tells everybody in the team, I don't know, you know, what you guys are doing all day, but everybody needs to be in the office between 8 and 4. It's pharmaceutical sales. And so I know, right? Because right away you go, wow, you have no idea what we do and you have no idea how we sell. And you don't trust us. Wow, a triple whammy.
Yeah. I know with some pharmaceutical companies here, they've actually put locators on their people so they know how long they're at different places. And those people haven't stayed with those businesses very long because of that trust factor.
Chapter 2 is our trust factor. It's chapter 2. It's our most popular chapter. And I'll just tell you really quickly for your listening audience, it's the free chapter. And if you go to the website with the number 7 prescriptions for success.com, there are some great resources there, including that trust chapter, which is widely used because trust is everything in the workplace. And especially now when people can work, they can work from home, they can work from a coffee shop, they can work from a diner, you can work from a truck stop, you can work from your car. And as long as you're producing the results, why do I care how long it takes you? You know, before you'd punch a clock and you're like, okay, we're supposed to be here for an 8 or 10 hour day or whatever, and you're paid because you're at work. Well, isn't it better if we're being paid for results? And if I can do the same job in 1 hour and it takes somebody else 15 hours, why do you care where I am the other 14 hours? It really doesn't matter as long as I'm producing what I'm supposed to be producing. But the trust factor is huge and it's manifested in so many ways in the workplace. And as soon as a leader tells their team or implies, I don't trust you, all of a sudden, that is reciprocated immediately, and they don't trust the boss.
Mm, yes, it comes back the other way, doesn't it? Absolutely. And that's what I found in this particular instance. It was, there was, especially when you had 20 years tenure and someone's in there for 10 minutes, you know, you go, well, you sort of haven't seen what's happened in the past, you know.
You try to support them because they're the boss, but then you disrespect them. And then you're like, you know what? You get to a certain point, you go, I don't have to do this. And right now, especially, you know, globally, we've got really, really low unemployment numbers. So if somebody doesn't like their job, they can leave, they can move.
Mm. And that's exactly what I did. And a huge loss to the business with the IP that I carry, you know, that was just, okay, as you said, I could do something in an hour that would take other people 5 hours because I'd been doing it for so long. But
exactly
and managers and leaders are different. So that was a manager, you know, there was an attempt at a manager, but leaders are completely different than a manager. And I think people sort of clump them together, don't they?
I think they do. And I think managers sometimes get a bad rap because they are getting squeezed on both sides. And it's great when you're the person in charge, especially if it's your own business. That's fantastic because you are the leader, the manager, the bookkeeper, the janitor, you're everything. But mm-hmm. sometimes we have to really take a step back, especially if it's our own business, and say, okay, am I thinking like a manager? Am I thinking like a leader? Am I thinking like an owner? And I have to tell you, I love employees who think like owners. People who say, you know what, if I was running this business, this is the decision I would make, and they run with it. They're self-motivated, they're intrinsically motivated, and they think with the organization in mind, and we love those people. Leaders have to show up and give not only the guidance and direction and the structure and the goals, but they've also got to have this big vision about where it is they want the organization to go. And many people confuse, I think, tactics and with strategy and vision. So for example, I just got to speak at a conference that was about child abuse prevention, and it was in one of our states. And I asked about 700 people in the room. I said, so what would be, you know, what would be your vision for what you do? And these are lovely people, social workers, people who care about children. And they said, we want more resources. We want more teachers involved. We want more parental education. We want more law enforcement to understand what it is, you know, this looks like. And we want more people involved earlier. And we want to educate all these things, you know, all these tactics. And I said, you know, I have to tell you that my vision for what you do is very different from what you're telling me. And so the audience kind of gasped, oh no, that's terrible. I said, well, my vision for what you do is there will never again be another child abused in this state, ever. And see, that to me is a vision. A vision is something that everybody can kind of get behind and go, oh, that's what we're doing here. All these other things are pieces to go towards that end thing. And so leaders have to constantly be reminding people of that big vision of where we want to go and what we want to do. And then the why behind it, we can make this happen if we do this, and here's why we get to do this. Here's why this matters. You know, most of us want to wake up every day and have a mission, a cause, something that makes us feel like we're part of something bigger. And leaders have to give that to their people.
We're a bit of synchronicity here as well. I completely agree with everything you've said there. I ran a mastermind, run mastermind groups, and the topic of discussion last week was a vision, and getting people to think up and not write it as a goal or what they wanted, but a vision for their business. Mm-hmm. It was such a fun activity because they got to just, what was the ultimate, you know, what do you see? What do you want? And there were some beautiful statements came out of it but they hadn't actually, most of them hadn't written that before as a vision and just sort of worked on goals and what they want to achieve over a certain period of time. And I haven't heard the word tactics used, but obviously with your background, that's a good word. but that's what those steps are. They're tactics to get there. But that's what we focused on was, first of all, asking questions about what things they'd love to do and what sort of rocks their boat, but why does it do that? And then create the vision from that statement. And these were all small business owners. So, you know, and your statement about run it like their own business. Well, a lot of the people that listen to the podcast actually are in their own business. They may be solopreneurs or micro or small business operators. And it's still the same, isn't it? They got to run it like their own business because it is, but it's having that vision for their business and then what strategies to get there.
You're so right. And for your teams, they're so lucky to have you leading them in this exercise, because once your vision is clear, it prioritizes everything you do. So you're not lost on other things. You're not distracted by other things. You're not chasing every single idea. If you remain very focused on that vision that you've carefully crafted, articulated, and you're clear on this, then you can be more efficient with everything else you do. And I will tell you, you're so right to work through the vision before you work through the goals. I put together something just for people like your folks, and they'll get this from you today. It's a one-page, 5-minute vision plan, and it walks you through how to create the vision for your business that works for you. It is one page, because if you make it more than one page, sometimes people they get lost, they get confused. You know, the old days were, let's put together a 90-page business plan so we could throw this out to those are gone. So we do a vision plan first, and that's one page. It's called the 5-minute vision plan. And then we do a 5-minute business plan, because I can't tell you how many business owners I talk to. And I say, so what does your business plan look like? And they point to their head and they say, it's all up here. Well, the scary thing about it being all up in your head and not written down anywhere is, first off, if something happens to you, there's no guidance for the rest of your team. They don't know what to do if something happens to you. Second, if you write it down and craft it and post it somewhere, then you're clear and reminded of your priorities. So you're not getting distracted. It helps guide your activities and where it is you're going. And then third, the fact that you haven't taken even 5 minutes to craft where you want to spend all of your time and resources of your waking, breathing business world, which is, frankly, if you're a business person, you're in it for yourself, you're spending 40 to 60 to 80 or 90 hours a week doing this, and you can't spend 5 minutes figuring out where you're going, that seems kind of crazy. It's like somebody trying to run a race and not knowing where the finish line is, or not knowing what direction to run in.
And there's so many people do that when they're stepping into business. I spoke to someone the other day, and we're working through, and I said, well, what do you want to build? And that's what we got, silence. She wasn't sure exactly what she wanted to build.
I think people really get stuck in a couple places. And I think they get stuck first off in the, I just have to get through the day mentality. And especially, you know, you're facing summer and the holiday season down there, and we're facing snow and the holiday season up here, and especially around the holidays, or times when people are coming back to school, or there's always something going on. And so people oftentimes use the excuse of, it's summer break, or it's the holidays, or it's this, to not get these things done. And I think we need to spend just a little bit of time making sure that we're not spinning our wheels. We're not wasting effort. And I call this the SDS syndrome, stop doing stupid. SDS, it sounds like a disease, but it stopped.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that in the notes when I put up the podcast. Absolutely.
SDS, stop doing stupid. And we can think of all kinds of stupid things that people do, and we just have to stop. And as a leader or a manager, if you really want to find out what's going on in your organization, and you walk around, as you're walking through and you go, hey, how you doing today? Everybody's going to go, good. How's your day? Fine. What's going on? Everything's great. You're not going to get anything. You're going to get monosyllabic answers like you would get from a 16-year-old. Yep. Good. Great. That's it. You're getting nothing. But if you ask people, you say, so what did you do today that took longer than you expected? Or what did you do today that was stupid? What did you do today that wasted time? They will tell you. And you need to listen. You need to pay really close attention to that, because they're probably right. There's probably stupid stuff that's going on and you don't even know.
That's just a fantastic question. I love those questions, you know, what wasted time, what did you do that was stupid? And that, the amount of times, and it was okay when I was in a management role to be able to go, this is stupid, or someone had come to me because they knew that I would actually act on it, going, this is stupid. Right. We don't need to do this. And so then I would then go track down the history of why we were doing something in a particular way, and then figure out whether we needed to continue doing it, there was actually a purpose to it, or it was stupid and we just didn't need to do that anymore. And I loved it when people brought that to me, because it would just delete this then, you know, once we found out whether we could or not, and it wasn't necessary. And it took frustration out of their day, and it made it more pleasurable. And they also felt like they'd contributed as well. That was a big point too.
That's it. I do think that most people want to show up at work and do a good job. Mm-hmm. I think most people want to show up at work and feel valued and respected and listened to and have their opinions considered. And when you and you can try this on, you know, if people have kids, you ask your kids, so, you know, what did you think about today? Instead of, how was your day? Good, fine. Mm-hmm. So what did you think about? What could be improved in how you study this? You know, don't ask questions that are going to elicit monosyllabic answers, because you're going to get those, and that doesn't tell you anything.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's great. And it's funny, my children have passed that, but the grandchildren now, it's the 5-year-old again. you know, how are you? Good. You know, it's but it's the same thing you say yourself. You know, it's exactly the same. Yeah, that's excellent. So that's a good question. I'll think about that and take that into that level as well. It's certainly.
And I love new ideas, but so many leaders come in and go, "Oh, I've got this new idea," and your people have to say, "Okay, we can do that. Now, what do we need to stop doing to make that happen?" Because you don't have unlimited resources in most cases. That's a great idea. Now, what are we going to stop doing? And I've got to tell you, my own stuff. I have an entire room of my house and I call it the inventory room. And I have books and manuals and CDs, remember CDs and DVDs and all kinds of paper things from the last, 10, 12 years of business. And part of me looks at this stuff and goes, can I get rid of it? Am I ready to, move all these old versions of things out so I can make way for new things? And it's hard even for me, and I love new stuff and I love new challenges and I love change. And even then I look at some of this stuff and I go, oh, but remember when I did that? It's kind of nostalgic. And sometimes we hang on to things in business that are not based on logic and rational things. It's based on the emotion that we had when we maybe first started it. And it's something to think about when you're a business person is this the best decision for the business or am I doing this because it's best for me personally?
That's a very good point. And interesting you're talking about that. I did a big clean out of my office just recently and I found all of these amazing notes and papers and CDs and information. So now I run a weekly coaching call for clients on a webinar. Mm-hmm. So now I just put that together as a 30-minute webinar and that information. Ooh. And then I discard the paper so that I've got it there is a electronic version in this webinar for prosperity, and plus my clients can look at it then, people can look at it in the future as well. So, for me, that was a great way not to just discard things and
brilliant.
Yeah, yes,
that's so brilliant because I've got the same thing. I've got piles of notebooks with notes in them.
Yes. Yep, me too. I'm looking at them here now. There's quite a few, Ben. Yeah, and it's just brilliant information that you've gone and listened to other speakers and go, oh, that's great as well. I'll pop that down and it's really valuable. You've then applied it and you've figured out what works and what doesn't. And yeah, so anyway, that's what I'm doing with that. But that's a really, important part is, especially in business, is what am I hanging on to this and does it work? And that's why I think, with a lot of the people that have that are working for themselves in their own business as a solopreneur or a micro business is that they have to evolve. Where I started 10 years ago in the business has had a name change since then, but the name wasn't just the main change. It's the whole emphasis behind the training. And now because I've moved out of that role that I was in while I was, running this business as well, and all the focus is on my coaching and training business, is that it's going through a big evolution again now because it's a full-time entity now as well. So I've got the opportunity to put the time and effort into it to ensure that it is. But you have to evolve. And what I was doing 10 years ago is certainly not what I can do now. And letting go of that stuff is important.
It is hard to let. It's hard to let go of things that made you successful.
Mm. Yes. Well, I'd probably choose not to do that, though, Mary.
Well, I mean, but what I'm saying is, there's certain things that they made us successful, and they got us up to here. And then to go to that next level, we sometimes have to get rid of some of those other things. And I think for a lot of leaders and managers today, that can be tough. And as well as when you're running your own business, some things that you say, but I was an advertising executive. I was great at this and I'm running my own business, but because you still did so much advertising, that's still such a strength in your wheelhouse that sometimes you micromanage the people who are supposed to do that for you, or you spend too much time on it because that's kind of your strong point and you neglect other parts of your business. And you and I see this all the time with our business owners, our solopreneurs, where they work to their strengths, but then they ignore the other pieces of the business that could make them even more successful.
Now that's a very important factor as well. And I've
downloaded some of your testimonials from your book because I just thought they were awesome. And I want to ask about, you know, your 25 years on active duty and how that sort of has affected making you a better business person. But I found this really a great testimonial from Brigadier General Richard Fullerton from the USAF and retired Brigadier. But his comments were, this book is gold. This is page after page of fantastic leadership advice and wisdom backed up by case studies, interviews and data. This is a great book for leaders to read, not just once, but once a year, to remind them that they all can and should be doing to make their organizations, people, mission and environment even better. If leaders or prospective leaders will read this book, it's going to improve a lot of lives, not just of leaders, but of their followers and bosses as well. And I just went, oh, that is just... And you know what jumped out at me is not just reading this once, but reading it once a year, because we also needed to be reminded. And you know, and that's come from the Brigadier and you with, you know, the active service that you did in that leadership role. It's obviously, you know, you've learned a lot from that, but anything, you know, particular points of that has come from being in the Navy and for so long that you've included in the book that people may not think of in a general business sort of term.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for including that. And yeah, General Fullerton was just awesome to write that for us. And he was such a great leader. And it was just a privilege knowing him. But many people ask sometimes, they say, well, how in the world does 25 years of active duty translate into helping business owners? So a couple of reasons why it translates pretty well. First, we still have to maintain big budgets. You know, we have to have a bottom line. We have to meet a budget. We have to produce results or, you know, we get fired too. People don't often realize that, but military people get fired.
Yeah, we don't sort of think that. Fired, or do you get moved around? Or,
well, sometimes you get moved around, but you can also just be, you know, you do badly at one job, and they say, you know what, this military service thing is not for you. You need to pack your stuff and go away. Find something else to do.
Okay.
And ideally, we set people up for success, but we also take responsibility for our failures. Our failures tend to be very public because they're dangerous and bad things happen when we fail, especially when we fail on a big scale. And our failures are important for us to own. So every time we do an exercise, there's a what we call a hot wash afterwards, a debrief where we say, okay, what did we do well? What could we have done even better? So when I ask leaders to think about this, I say, okay, great. I have to use the terms even better. So I say, you're a great leader. Now, how do you get even better? How do you continue to evolve? And here's why. I'm at a certain age where if I don't keep exercising, bad things happen. So just to keep it status quo, I have to work harder than ever just to keep status quo. And if I actually want to get better, put on more muscle mass, maybe trim a few, you know, things here and there, I've got to really work hard. And as leaders, when you're already really good, you have to work really hard to get even better. And this is what, and when I liken it to that idea, people go, oh, so I'm good, but I can't just rest on my laurels. I can't just assume that it's going to continue to stay that way. And in the military, we're constantly pushed not just by each other, but by our bosses. Our bosses say, you know what, you're great at that. I want you to keep doing that, and I want you to get even better at this. So I use the term even better a lot. Mm-hmm. You're okay at this. Let's get you even better.
Yeah, term. It's so simple, isn't it?
Instead of saying, well, you know, it's not your strength. Yeah, you know, you're bad at this, so you should probably improve that. No, it's not the worst thing, but let's just get even better. Let's focus on that. We also push each other to learn from the mistakes, like I said, look to get even better. But there's also this idea of, and this is where being a business owner is very similar. You make a mistake as a business owner, you own it. That's your bottom line, you know, and I've made colossal mistakes as a business owner. I've hired the wrong people. I hired the wrong executive coach for me. That's why I'm really careful when I coach other people. We have a long conversation for an hour or two ahead of time to make sure it's going to be the right fit. If I don't think I can help you and I find somebody else who can help you better, I'm going to turn you over to somebody else if I don't think I can help you. that I have to make sure that if I make a mistake, it's mine. And I had one of the people work for me make a mistake, and it cost me in US dollars about $10,000, which is a lot. And she said, oh gosh, I really screwed up on this, didn't I? And I was like, well, I'd be lying if I said you didn't. And she looked at me and she goes, so what happens next? I said, well, I said, keep in mind, I said, I'm the boss. So whatever, you know, the fact that you made this mistake, that's my mistake, because I didn't properly train you. I didn't properly prepare you for this situation. And I'm going to just assume that you did the best you could based on what you had. Now, having said that, moving forward, really good words, moving forward, this is how we're going to handle that in the future. So it would be great if we could just keep this in mind, you know, but you as the business owner, you feel the failures because they are yours. And when that is your mortgage that has to be paid and your bills that have to be paid, you pay attention to that. And so many people, I think they abdicate responsibility if they're working for somebody else. There's always the idea of, oh, I don't have to care about that. In economics, it's my PhD, like, you know, is in economics, which is why I do leadership for profit improvement and profit growth, because we're all about making sure that bottom line looks like what you want. And in economics, we call this the principal agent problem, that there's the principal, the organization, and you as the agent of the organization should have the best intentions for the organization. But sometimes you don't. Sometimes, you know, you walk away with the pen from work, or you, you know, don't do your very best at work all the time. Well, when you're the business owner, yeah, that there is no such thing as the principal agent problem. Everything is your business, and it is deeply personal, and that ownership is very, very real.
Absolutely, yeah, and it is. It's a different way of thinking. It's very interesting that you were. I'm just trying to think. That I just had this really, really cute little anecdote that you were talking about with that. And it's just totally gone from my head. I'm sure it'll pop in a moment as well. I thought, oh, I'll mention that when you finish that statement, and absolutely gone, because I was listening ahead as well. And anyway, so, obviously not relevant.
It's all good.
I do remember. I do remember that. My son works in construction, and there was one of the young guys that had ordered all of this concrete for this major job, and he just got it wrong. And he ordered $30,000 worth of extra concrete, which you can't send back. It's already prepared in the concrete mixers. It doesn't go back at all. So they just had to dump it on site and let it harden, and eventually cart it off. And so he really thought he was sacked and everything. Anyway, his boss called him in, and much the same conversation as you just said. But so he said, you know, so have I lost my job? And the boss said, I've just spent $30,000 training you. And it was a really good attitude, because he will never make that mistake again.
You know, and you're so right about this. I'll give you a fun example. My husband was a Marine, in our Marine Corps as well. Mm-hmm. And so everybody in my family is military. So my older brother
did
was
you ever
Marine
get to see him if you're traveling the world in different places? And
The good thing about having both of you military is that you kind of understand the deployments and the separation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily make it easier, but you understand it. And I'll just tell you from the military perspective, it is much harder on the person who's left behind. Mm-hmm. Because when you're out and you're deployed and you're doing things, you're focused, especially in the Navy and the Marine Corps. In the Navy, you know, we sleep at work. We sleep on the ship. We sleep where we work. So you're working all the time. You're sleeping when you can. There's no days off. You know, ship's in the middle of the ocean. Don't just go, oh, wait, it's Friday afternoon. Let's have happy hour. You know, let's just stop. Doesn't work like that. And by the way, this is where the Australian Navy is much better than ours, because you allow alcohol on your ships and we don't. It's a big problem. Yeah. Yes. So it's always really good for us when we get sent over to do operations with you folks. We prefer it for so many reasons. Anyway.
And plus you can be 18 and not 21. That's
right.
But the younger sailors, yeah.
I remember the first time that I saw the pilot of one of the P3s from the Australian Air Force, and there's this kid who's the pilot. I was like, wait, how old are you? And he goes, I'm 19. I'm like, I wouldn't even get in a car with you, and you want me to get in the back of this plane? And he's like, I'm a really good kid. I'm like, oh, dear God, you're 19. You know, it's a little bit frightening.
Yeah.
But yeah, my, My older brother, his wife, my husband, me, my sister was Air Force. Her husband was Navy. My younger brother's Navy. So all of us.
Oh, wow. You know, okay.
Yeah. But we talk in short, choppy sentences, and that's how we communicate. Mm. Well, so to us, it's perfect communication. But to other people, it can sound quite rude because we don't always say all the words. And my younger brother is the only person who married somebody who is not military. Mm-hmm. And so she got to a family gathering and her head is just going in 18 different directions. She's like, y'all are all carrying on like 16 conversations at once. And everybody seems to be like listening and you use short, sharpy sentences. And I said, for us, it's perfect communication, but it's not that way with everybody. And this is one of the things where we as leaders have to look really hard and make sure that we're communicating in a way that works for them, not for us. And that's really hard because our natural instinct is to communicate in a way that we're comfortable with. And that's not always how it is on the intended receiver.
No, and that could be another hour's conversation, Mary, quite easily. I love the talking about communication and effective and ineffective and how people actually listen and hear information and where they really do listen as well. It's a big topic.
It's a big topic. And then you think about, you know, the person you live with and you have miscommunications with them and they know you better than anybody and they love you. So you think you're not going to have miscommunications at work? Of course you are. Mm-hmm. So at work, if you think you're communicating enough, you're probably not breaking even. You need to be just communicate and communicate some more. Mm-hmm. And there's some fun exercises that I did, what day is it? 2 days ago. And I had a group of people and I threw up a list of words on a screen, just about 14 words, words that we all know: pencil, glass, window, charity, integrity, service. And I said, great. And I read the list. I said, look hard at this list. I went to a blank screen. I said, now write down as many as you can remember. Now I told them to pay attention. I had said all the words and they were familiar with every single word. And the best I got was about 6 out of 14. And the reason is, you know, we think as leaders that we tell people stuff over and over and over. We think they get it, but they don't. People don't get everything we tell them. And that people say, well, I know the boss told me this, or I know I should know this, but then I don't. But I've already asked twice and don't want to ask again. And that's where mistakes happen in the workplace. So we've got to be willing to let people make mistakes. And also, like you were saying with the concrete, and also have object lessons. So one quick story. My husband, they do this amphibious thing where they get dropped off from a plane and they jump into the middle of the ocean in a little rubber boat and then they paddle ashore. And then they, you know, they do this exercise thing where they're going to take the shoreline or whatever. It's a training exercise. And then a big old truck comes to pick them all up. So there's, I don't know, about 35 guys and big old 5-ton truck. And so I was expecting them home after, you know, a couple of days training for like a dinner. So dinner was ready at 6 o'clock and he wasn't home, and it was 8 o'clock and he wasn't home. And I still don't have a phone call and it's midnight and he wasn't home. And now I'm mad. You know, now I'm mad. I'm that worried mad, you know, thing that you get. Mm-hmm. And I'm worried and mad when he finally rolled in at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, where have you been? He's like, we're on the exercise. I was like, yeah, but you were supposed to be home by 5:30. What happened? And he said, the guys got the truck stuck in the sand on the beach where we did the amphibious assault. And I looked at him and I said, honey, you've been doing this for 20 years. You know how to get a truck unstuck from the sand. And he looked at me and he goes, yep. And now so do they. And I know, right? And so I said, well, did you tell him? He goes, nope. And I was like, are you kidding? He goes, nope. I said, what did you do for 7 hours? He goes, oh, I walked up and down the beach and up and down the beach. I said, and they didn't want to approach you. And he goes, no, they knew they should know. He said, and I think some of them were wondering how long I was going to let it go before I told them how to do it. I said, what'd they finally do? And he goes, well, somebody finally figured out to open up that manual, the instructions, and actually read the instructions and do what it says. I was like,
yeah.
Awesome. So sometimes, you know, we have to let people make mistakes and we have to have those object lessons so that they really remember and it really hits home in a way that us saying, okay, yeah, do this, do that, doesn't have that same effect. So you, all of a sudden you think these people have been, they've been wet and they're cold and they're covered with sand. Mm-hmm. And they're still-
Yeah. And they're in front of, no, it's brilliant. It's a great way. Now we have got about 2 minutes, just to run through some really quick takeaway points, and then we'll figure out how people can get in touch with you. And you did mention some free downloads as well. So, I'll let you go.
So what's a good takeaway?
What's a good takeaway, Mary?
So I think for business owners, one great takeaway is have an effective and viable vision plan. Mm-hmm. Have a business plan that works for you. Be laser-like focused on what it is makes you successful and where you're going to spend your time, resources, and energy. And number four, and you've probably got a good takeaway as well, but what I think helps me is that military discipline of, you know, you get up every morning and you structure the day and you don't waste time. Mm-hmm. And this is where I think a lot of people suffer in their businesses. They just waste time because they're not laser-like focused. Mm-hmm. So what's a good takeaway for you?
Well, for me, I love that idea, you know, making sure you've got a vision as well. And rather than start with a vision rather than starting writing goals. I mean, that's a really important focus within that. But, and I know something we didn't discuss, but I know this is part of, you know, what's in your information too, is be very clear on your market. Because mm-hmm. not everyone's your market, and but that's again another whole hour conversation, isn't it?
That is a whole other conversation, and I will tell you that the one mistake I see business people make is I say, "Well, who needs your product?" And they say, "Everybody." I'm like, "No, the entire universe is not your market. Let's get really, really clear on this, and you know, hone it down to where it is you want to spend your time and your resources, and who are the people you want to spend time with? That's mm-hmm. a good question too.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it, you know, mine's been a complete change into the small business, micro business market. And you know, mostly working with women or smart men, one of the two. Mm-hmm. And it's great because I love those people. I love being in their company. I love seeing them grow. I love seeing light bulbs go off. I love seeing that they're successful. I love seeing them develop stuff of their own and take that somewhere. You know, there's that for me, you know, I've got to a stage now where I still like to have an income and definitely want an income, but it's, I've got to get my reason to get up is to, you know, to help others as well, to achieve their dreams and goals so that they don't have to have a job, that they can do things that they are passionate about and they can make changes to people and individuals and societies as well with what they bring through. So yeah, that's my thing, you know, that I do what I do.
I totally agree with you, Janine. So somebody said, you know, why do you do what you do? And I said, influence, you know, to be able to influence other people so that they can become better. They can mm-hmm. move into their potential. It's frustrating to me to see really talented people who are not living in a place of what I call happy potential because they just don't know how to get there and they don't know how to stay there. Mm-hmm. And it's sad to me when people, you know, like the movie, you know, lead lives of quiet desperation. I want people to be living in their happy potential.
Mm, that's a lovely terminology. It's, yeah, and that says it all, doesn't it? You know, that they, yeah, that they can, yeah, that's it. We've got, there's so much potential. That's why we've got, you know, the world's changing with all of the small business and the micro business people as well. That's why there's so many more of those people moving into that space is because they have potential and rather than working for themselves, rather than working for other people, they can bring that through as well. So how can people get in touch with you, Mary, and any of the free downloads that you mentioned as well? Keeping in mind this podcast, I know we're talking about the holiday season at the moment. The interview is being done just before Christmas, but it will come out in a month or so after that. It's so not time dependent, but if you can mention it, that would be great.
No, this is totally available to your listeners. And we created a link just for you, and it's productiveleaders.com, because who wants an unproductive leader? Mm-hmm. productiveleaders.com/vault, VAULT. And it is going to ask you to sign in because we got inundated with spam and hackers and things. So it's going to ask you to sign in. Sorry about that. And then you're going to get this entire repertoire of 5-minute plans and the productivity system and some great articles. And especially if you're trying to kick off your year or renew your quarter or really get that focus, you're going to get that 5-minute vision plan and the 5-minute business plan and the 5-minute productivity plan and the 5-minute social media plan and just a whole bunch of other things. And this is totally free. We live to serve other people and we want to help people do as much as possible with whatever they've got and wherever they are.
And that's fantastic, those 5-minute plans, because that's just an incredible valuable resource, because a lot of people think, oh, I haven't got time to do that. But as you said earlier, you know, it's 5 minutes. That's all it is. That's all you've got to apply to do that plan. And if you've got the vision and you know what your mission is, then you know where you're going. And you know what's going to work and fit within that as well. Yeah, absolutely.
And then it drives everything. It's
yeah. So your website, if people want to check it out and buy and pick up a copy of the Why Leaders Fail as well.
That would be awesome if they, but again, we are just there to provide resources. A lot of the resources came from the book called 15 Ways to Grow Your Business in Every Economy. And some of my business people like that one as well. And there's a couple excerpts from that, I think, in the vault. And we'll make sure we'll double check that and make sure it's there for your audience. We would be thrilled if people would check that out.
Oh, that's excellent. And again, that is productiveleaders.com is the website and /vault to get all the juicy information.
Yes. Yes. Well,
yeah. But look, it's been really wonderful, Mary. And I keep saying, maybe next Christmas, you know, when you're not as busy again, because I know I've been trying to. We'll look at communication as a topic.
I would love that. Oh, I would love that. That's so much fun.
Yeah.
That would be so much fun. And you are great to talk to. You're just so much fun and you're so easy. It's wonderful. Your clients are so lucky.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. It's just something, again, it's something that I just love doing. And the podcasts over the last couple of years, here's so much incredibly valuable information from talented women from all over the world who, you know, very generous and share on the podcast their ideas. And it's just wonderful that we can then, you know, it flows onto other people as well and they can take away. But I have to say, look, the best statement is that SDS. I just love that. Just stop doing stupid. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
If we all do that, we'll be great. Look, thank you very much, Mary. It has been a wonderful chat, and I like to call it a chat rather than an interview, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, Janine, the honor is all mine, and thank you so much for your lovely time and attention today.
Thanks, Mary. And that is Mary C. Kelly, and please go check out the website, productiveleaders.com, and the information is in that vault, so it's /vault. That's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. If you are looking for some information from me, if you're looking for other past podcasts, episodes, a ton of blog material, it's all on the website, JanineVosper.com. Go check it out and see what's available. If you're interested in upcoming workshops, and there's a whole lot already planned for 2019 and a lot of free stuff as well. So go jump on and just see what is there for you. Look forward to chatting next episode. Bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.